Welcome to the Future of Pickleball. This is the show where we talk with the leaders and shakers who are making things go in the sport of pickleball. Today, our guest is Rob Nunnery. He has been a podcaster, a pro player, an international traveler in pickleball. Rob, welcome to the show. Let's get started. Into this show, I want to talk to you about Selkirk's amazing line of pickleball nets. Whether you're just starting out or you're a seasoned pro, Selkirk has the perfect net for you. When you choose a Selkirk net, you're not just choosing any net. You're opting for the official net of the PPA Tour, where excellence meets professional play. With Selkirk's line of nets, you can play pickleball anywhere. Selkirk's range of nets cater to every player's needs, offering budget-friendly choices for casual enthusiasts and premium options for those who want a more competitive edge, ensuring quality play for all levels. I've got a Selkirk net myself, and let me tell you, it's a game changer. It's all about playing on your terms wherever you want. So if you love pickleball as much as I do, check out Selkirk's pickleball nets. Get the freedom to play anywhere and elevate your game with the net trusted by the pros. Selkirk's got you covered. If you're interested in getting a net of your own, go to selkirk.com/collections/nets. You can also find this link in the description of this show. All right, let's jump into it. Well, Rob Nunnery, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Paul. It's I've seen the show for a long time and always was waiting on my time to be here, and I'm pumped to be here.
Good. Well, I have been looking forward to you. There's going to be a little surprise I've got for you a little further along in the show.
Okay.
I know you're not aware of, but we'll get to that. Hey, you know, as we do these kinds of interviews, it's always critical that our guests get a chance. People may see you on your Feels Right show with Adam Stone, but I want you to give us a little bit of an idea as really where did your beginning happen?
Sure. It was the very end of 2019. I was living in Austin, Texas, and I didn't really know what pickleball was until I had a buddy of mine talk to me about it. And that buddy is Adam Franklin, a Franklin pickleball. His family is, you know, they started Franklin Sports back in, I think, 1940 something or forever ago. And he was like, yeah, our fastest growing segment's pickleball. And he was like, some of our top pros are former high level tennis players. And I played college tennis and he knew that. So yeah, he mentioned it to me first, and then I took a lesson in Austin. I found it to be very weird that I was on the other end of it, because I had given so many tennis lessons in the past. And I was like, tell me the rules, tell me all the stuff. And that day that I took that lesson, I went home, created an Instagram post and said, I am going to go pro within a year, and I'm going to document it here. And the rest is history.
How fun. Before we get into some of the things that you've done, one of the things that really impressed me a great deal, because I've actually been watching you for a pretty long time, because I've been around the game like since the dawn of time. But one of the things that I want to do is just kind of, would you give us a little bit of the specifics of how many pro tournaments have you won to date?
Oh, I have no idea. That's a great question. I think it's just since last year, I think at 13 or 14 right now. So yeah, prior to that, I'm not sure of the actual number, but yeah, I've been having a blast this last year, playing a lot with some really talented partners, which I can credit a lot of those tournament wins to those guys and gals. So yeah.
Well, it is actually, my research had shown 13, but I wanted to make sure I wasn't missing the mark. So that's very cool. Well, Andre, you guys have had a phenomenal run together. That's been a kind of a cool experience. Why don't you kind of expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, I think we had a good run and we were a good team and we play the same way. And we're both really good competitors, I feel. I think that's probably our strength, is our like will to win, truly. And the fact that we both like to drop, get to the kitchen, get into the dink rallies. Like that's kind of our bread and butter. And I think that's where we play best. And yeah, he's incredibly talented. He's had an amazing run the last couple of months. And even before, where he where he won MLP with the Orlando Squeeze, and then filled in for James Ignatowicz at a PPA and won the gold in mixed with Anna Bright, and then won the gold in men's with Matt Wright. So great run for him. Yeah, and he's super fun to play with.
That's very cool. You know, when I think back to having the amount of time that I've watched you come through the game and grow with it, it's hard to imagine we're talking to someone who's one of the sort of OGs of the game, and you're talking about 2019. But in pickleball years, of course, that whole thing, you know, yeah, is kind of nuts. When you finally made that move and you started recording and broadcasting your trip, your journey, how did that whole thing kind of take on a life of its own?
Yeah, I think I was in a past life, I had an advertising business that I left in 2017. And then I did a podcast called Fail On, which was essentially a interview type show similar to this one, where I would talk to different people that have seen success, whether it's business or music or sports, and kind of go through their journey of struggle and how they got to the top of their field. And at the time when this whole pickleball thing happened and I found it, I had kind of slowed down that podcast, and I was kind of just looking for like what's next in my life. You know, I think I was 34 or 35 at the time, and didn't know if it was another business. I certainly didn't think it was going to be being a professional athlete. Like, that was probably last on the list of what I thought was possible moving forward. But getting into kind of the documentation of the journey is like, I like big goals. I like big projects to work on. And I was like, you know what, I'm going to give this a year, see what happens with it. I have no idea if pickleball is going to be a thing. I just knew that I had a ton of fun playing it and that I wanted to kind of see where I could go with it. And I journaled and blogged basically on a site called Pickleball Portal. I don't know if some of those blogs are still up, but I basically just talked about like, hey, this is what I'm learning today. I lost because this guy was doing this. This is what I need to work on. And it was truly just like a kind of a beginner's mindset documentation of how to get better at pickleball.
I really enjoy, for people that don't know, let's spend a little bit of time talking about It Feels Right podcast that you do with Adam Stone. And then I'd like to also talk about what you're doing with the Destination Pickleball Show, because it really feeds into those things. But let's start with It Feels Right. You guys, you and Adam, are really knowledgeable guys, and it shows in your podcast, the depth and description and the analysis that you do. Is that something that came naturally to you? Did you get it through tennis? How did that come about?
I think we're unique in respect to, Adam was one of the top five players in the game when, you know, before he stopped playing. I'm still currently playing. I think we have a unique insight based on that. He sees things that I don't see. I see things that he doesn't see. And it's a good dynamic in terms of, because he's still also doing commentary. He's a GM for an MLP team. He's helping coach some players. So he's still very much breaking down points, watching how the game's evolving. And I have the unique perspective of being on the court right now against these players and seeing what's working and what's not. So I just think it jives really well in terms of my insight and his insight. It complements each other pretty well.
You know, the thing that I find most interesting, being a long-term pickleball person, having watched the highest level of pickleball before it was a professional game, but to have seen the way the game has evolved and developed over the last 3 years is just on the order of amazing. Did you see that coming? Did you anticipate that? Or did you have to react to that?
Honestly, I'd love to say, yeah, I saw this coming. But in full transparency, it was a reaction for sure. I think the catalyst isn't so much, a lot of people are like, oh, well, now there's better athletes coming in. There have always been world-class athletes playing pickleball and pro pickleball, truly. I think the catalyst in my eyes was, I can point back to a very specific time. I was playing with Adam Stone as a partner at the Delray Beach. I believe it was an APP. And we were playing Jay DeVilliers and Pat Smith. And Pat Smith had this new paddle, this Electrum raw carbon fiber paddle. And one of my best talents at pickleball, in pickleball at that time, was I was very good at getting out of the way of balls, letting out balls go. Like, I had it really dialed. If somebody was hitting an out ball, I wasn't going to touch that thing. And I remember hitting a return, a slice return, coming in. Pat Smith, you know, rears back to hit a forehand. He wails on it. The thing, the trajectory clears my head. I don't even think about touching that ball because I'm like, it's going to hit the back fence or at yeah. least go like 5 feet out. And that thing dipped right into the right inside the baseline. And I literally couldn't believe it. And I was like, that's different. This is, yeah, if it goes this way, things are going to be very, very different.
And so now that they obviously have gone that way, I know there's a lot of conversation and a lot of discussion about, you know, are we going to become ping pong with, you know, with highly tactile rubber faces and things like that? Yep. Well, I don't think we want to go there. What do you think, or what do you think would be best for the sport in the technology side of things?
I believe the best way to do it is to dial back the speed and the power and the deflection of the ball and call it 25-30% less of what's capable now in terms of power. And I'm okay with dialing up the spin. Like, I would say a game that's a little softer, less power, but you can do pretty wild stuff with spin would lend itself to viewership. I think you'd have really interesting points. I think the hard, you know, the harder a paddle hits, the shorter the point's going to be typically. You're going to sure. have faster points. Which, you know, that might be the goal for some of these tours and organizations in terms of getting viewership on TV. They want faster points. To me, it makes the game more boring. I think we want longer but more interesting points. And I think having an increase in spin and a decrease in power would help do that.
That'd be cool. You know, something that I think about in terms of watching you, watching the other pros in the game, is the fact that we hear this term coming up more and more often. What is the pattern that they're playing? What is the rhythm of the point? Why don't you, for those of us that are regular folks, give us a little bit of an idea of what that patterning becomes?
Yeah, I think it depends on each team, honestly. You know, you see some of the top teams in the world that want to get to the kitchen line. They want to get into dink rallies because they know they're not going to miss dinks. They are going to, if they get a ball that's a little bit high, they've got the attacks and they know where to attack. I think that's mostly, you know, patterns typically are, you know, you look at like J-Dub and Dylan or the Johns, and they want to play slow. They want to dink. They want you to speed up. They all have fast hands. They all can counter well. They want to dictate from there. And I think that's, you got two contrasting styles, right? You've got guys that like to drive and crash, the shake and bake style. And then you have guys who want to get more into the patterns, which I look at patterns as guys that want to get to the kitchen.
Very nice. Very nice. You know, as we're talking here together, you're kind of at a little bit of a crossroads in life, in the standpoint that you've had some health issues that have been affecting your ability to play. And yeah. I had asked you if this was an okay topic to discuss. Why don't you give us a little bit of an idea of what you've got going on that is affecting your pro career?
Yeah. It's not something I've talked a ton about. I mean, I've alluded to it a little bit in terms of what's going on, and being diagnosed with Crohn's disease back in May of last year. But really, like, it started coming on in April of 22. I remember coming back from, I was living in Hawaii, and I was coming back from the Red Rock Open in St. George, Utah. And I just started having pain. Like, I had pain like in my butt, and I was like, what? I don't know what this is. I went to urgent care because it was so bad.
Wow.
Which, you know, yeah, it got to the point where it was just, I have to go see somebody. And urgent care sent me to a general surgeon, and from there, you know, MRIs, CT scans, nobody really could figure out what was happening. But it turned out that I had this pretty complex horseshoe abscess and fistulas, which all that means is like there's this, and they don't know why it happens or where it comes from or how it develops. It could just happen. And it's basically this infection that builds up. And yeah, I didn't know it was Crohn's related, which is a whole different ball game, but eventually got diagnosed and have been on medication since last May, which is a combination of a pill I take every day, which is this immunosuppressant drug called azathioprine, which basically it knocks my immune system down. So it, you know, it helps the inflammation in my gut with Crohn's, but it makes me more prone to getting sick and makes me feel tired. And then I'm on basically an infusion medication, which that just means I have to go to a hospital every 4 weeks to get an IV. It's like a slow drip medication that takes 2 hours for me to take. And that's what I'm trying to do right now to get it under control. But to say it's been difficult would be an understatement, like especially playing 30 weeks last year. There's most days I'm waking up and I'm feeling pretty tired. I'm feeling nauseous a lot. And it's been tough. Like, you know, my partner, Malin here, like she sees like what I go through and she's just like, at some point you have to prioritize your health. And I'm like, yeah, but what am I supposed to just like sit here and do nothing and just wait for it to get better? And it's been like an ongoing battle of like, how do we fix this? And because I'll play a tournament weekend, call it Friday to Sunday, and I'll come home and she sees like, she gets like the leftover version of me that's just so beat down and so tired. And she's just like, this is unsustainable. So that's led to a lot of, you know, tough choices this year in terms of what am I doing with my playing. I'm trying to put my health first in terms of figuring out how to solve, like, I can't keep living like I'm living. It's chronic pain. It's pain daily and it's tough. It makes me irritable. It makes me a bunch of things. But so I took a contract buyout with MLP because I wanted to not have to play as much. So I plan on playing the APPs at this point, and that's going to be it's going to be kind of a test to see if I can do it and if my body's up for it and if I feel like I can, you know, get through it. But yeah, it's been incredibly tough. There's no cure for it. So it's trying to figure out the best way to manage it to where my quality of life is good enough to do the things that I want to do, which, you know, if it's not playing, you know, similar to you, Paul, I love podcasting. I love talking about the sport. I love helping it grow. So if it's not playing, I hope I, you know, get it under control so I can keep doing things at pickleball because I love it.
And we want you to manage that, buddy. We need you. Yeah. We need you doing what you do. And we've heard Adam talk about the fact that he's sort of the first of the little bit older pros that were the first kind of out of it, and you're not all that far behind him age-wise.
Yeah.
What are you thinking about in terms of what you'd really like to do in the future?
Yeah, it's a great question. I love getting on and talking about pickleball. I love talking to people about pickleball and their stories. I love breaking it down. I like watching the pro game and understanding nuances and what's happening and why are people doing this and this. I like commentary. I think that would be a super fun route. I think on the coaching side and like even like the GM side of MLP would be pretty interesting and fun. I've been talking to a few different companies on what it might look like to help them grow their pickleball side. You know, one being UTR's come into the sport, you know, and they're looking to have a rating system. They have a fantastic tournament software where they want people to use their software for pickleball tournaments and events. I've talked to Ken Herman and the APP a little bit about, you know, potentially working with them and what that might look like. And there's a ton of opportunity internationally. I think that's really, really untapped. And I've done some work with the group of global sports in India. And yeah, so there's just so many different avenues that I could go. And all of it seems pretty fun and exciting. And I don't know which is going to pan out, but, you know, as long as I'm in pickleball, and getting to talk about it. It's all good.
Cool. Well, we're going to actually come back on a couple of those things that you mentioned and get into them in a little more depth. But before we do, I've got this surprise question that I had for you. Do you remember where you were on November 8th, 2020?
I would imagine I was at Dreamland finishing up MLP. Is that right?
You sure were. And it is. Yeah. I always have that fond memory. I was there. I've known Steve Kuhn for a long time. Mm-hmm. I had been invited to be at that event. I was sitting there in the front row at what I thought at the time was the greatest, coolest, most exciting new venture in pickleball. Did you find that to be the same being on court?
No doubt. It was easily my favorite moment in pickleball. Up to that point, honestly, probably still to today, it was just like the nighttime environment, having like just the stands right on the court. It was such a cool night and atmosphere. And I mean, big props to Steve Kuhn for creating it. And you see where it's at today and all the investment that's gone into it. And that's just a credit to what he's done.
You know, it's really interesting because I actually have some video that I took, and I remember sitting there drinking my third margarita, and I don't do third margaritas all that often, but it was the intensity in that venue was over the top. I came away from there, and I came from a lifetime in tennis, so I had played the standard, partners game. But I'd never seen the team side of it and the energy and the excitement. Do you believe that with what you're doing with MLP going forward and what you're doing with APP, what is your sense of the team approach as opposed to the classic individual player, individual partner group?
Yeah, I've got a pretty aggressive take on this, and I don't think it's super common or popular. I wish it were. I am a big believer. I think pro pickleball should not follow the typical tennis path. I don't think it should follow the tournament path and have, 250s, 500s, all of that and different. I think the most exciting event in pickleball is the team-based format with MLP. I think I could just see a world where, the St. Louis Shock was the team I was just on, where I spend, call the season, whatever. We play throughout the year. We have a condensed season between this month and this month. I could see myself, it wouldn't be home base, but I could see myself there for matches and there in between training and having our little home venue and playing the BLQK team and then playing them at their place. And I see that being what I envision pro pickleball being. I don't think it loses any of the luster of anything. I think the format, it's incredibly fun. It's the only format where I will sit down from morning to evening as a fan and not get bored watching all day long.
You know, that's why I like you, man, because you and I think exactly the same. I have thought to myself as an older, fairly high level player, what fun it would be to be going to playing in a tournament with four or six other contemporaries of mine flying in from all over the country to get into a big Airbnb, host a hell of a party, and play as a team and a group. I see things coming, and I really, you and I, maybe we ought to work on this together, because that's a sure. That is a fun piece. You know, when we think about how things are going right now and off of the tour wars and all of the issues that have gone on, we've got kind of a big deal happening with players withdrawing from the draft, not because of health issues, but because of other issues. How do you see that playing into the new relaunch of the MLP?
Yeah, I think it's always going to be part of it. For me also, like, health. I want less events. I don't want to have to commit to an additional six events, even though I love MLP and I think it's the best format. And like, yeah, I think that for those players that didn't sign contracts with MLP or PPA or, UPA as it is now known, you're competing for a amount of money that I don't know what it is. So I was never told like, hey, you can come compete and you'll make money. You'll make this if you win this. Like I, so I, that was never told to me. It was, so to me, it's like, I'm going to pay my own way to go play these events and not know what I'm going to make, or I could have full autonomy and schedule whatever I want, and go to the Swedish Open or go to the English Open and, you know, do something like that where you're helping grow the sport in a different place. And to me, that's like that, that was part of the reason I chose not to play and put my name in addition to the health stuff, obviously. But I think it's similar reasons for most people that opted out. I think, outside of like the Johnson Five, I think, you know, they were like, well, you know, we're not signed with you. We're not going to give you our time and, you know, our name recognition and all of that, which makes perfect sense to me. But I think for a lot of people, it was just six more events and they already have stuff planned out. And maybe there's conflicts based on APP events, because to get maximum prize money in APP, you have to play 12 events essentially. And some of those dates might conflict. So I think people put out for that reason as well.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Before we jump into our next part of our segment, I do want to ask any of you out there that are watching this, if you like this content, hit the like button, hit the subscribe. This is how we really get the word out on what we're doing here, both on this show, on Rob's show, on Selkirk TV across the board. Hit the likes and subscribes. We appreciate it. I want to jump in now to kind of the big picture, the future, where things are really going. Let's talk about it, and we'll call it the world, as opposed to America. Yep. And I know you've been to the last year you played in the English Open. Just a month or so ago, you were in Mumbai, India, and you played there.
Yep.
And by the way, you looked like you were a little walking wounded when you were in India. But tell us about what you're seeing on the international scene.
Oh, the excitement's just unbelievable. When we went to the English Open last year, I believe it was a thousand plus players at basically a convention center in Telford, England, which is just outside of Manchester, kind of northwest of London. And it was like the excitement was palpable. It was like everybody was smiling and having fun and happy to compete. And this is like their Super Bowl, you know, whereas in, I think in the US, like there's so many tournaments and people are kind of just like numb. And it's very like, even at the amateur level, very like focused and competitive. And this felt more of just like a festival, and people are still wanting to win clearly, but like you have somebody from, you know, Norway talking to somebody from Spain. And it's like, it was just this really cool atmosphere. And you had all these different countries connecting. And I think I would say, you know, some people say that the rest of the world's like 2 to 3 years. I think the rest of the world's like, I think England's like 5-6 years behind the US. So there's just so much opportunity over there and players are so excited and there's just nowhere to play in terms of like real facilities outside of like gym floors. I was shocked because my sister was living in Sweden, north of Gothenburg, and went there to visit right before the English Open, and was just like literally looking pickleball Gothenburg on Google and found a place, a padel facility, actually indoors at this big warehouse that was operated fully fully automated. So you get a code to go in, the lights are turned off, except at like 11 a.m., boom, light comes on, you have the court. Otherwise, you can't see. At 12 p.m., lights off, you're done, time to go. So, but they had three pickleball courts, permanent courts. And I was like, this is shocking. I would not have expected a permanent pickleball court in Gothenburg just randomly looking. So I think the more courts that come like that, it's going to, you know, just like we're seeing here in the U.S., I mean, how many franchises are going up now of pickleball courts and facilities and, you know, the entertainment stuff. It's growing insane. And then India, like the Indian Asian push is huge. They're putting a lot of money into it. They've got real at least in Mumbai and at least with global sports, they've got some real Indian star power behind it. I mean, I'm talking like celebrities on their team that have 30 million followers, like that kind of stuff. And they put on kind of the it was the largest tournament outside the US in terms of prize money, which was over, I think it was 110K. I mean, it's real stuff happening out there. I mean, you look at the APPs, a normal tournament's 100K. The majors, which there's four of, is 150K purse. So it's right on par with that. And there's talks of a pro tournament later in the year in Dubai, potentially, where the purse will be close to 500K. So they're in, again, in India, you got Pran, who owns Pickleball United. And he's doing a lot of stuff. I think it was the World Series, like Pickleball World Series, which he's planning six events on six continents and millions and millions in prize money. Like there are massive things happening internationally. And I think to think that UPA or PPA MLP is going to be the main pro tour in 5, 6, 10 years would be naive. I think it's going to keep changing, and I think there's a lot happening out there.
Yeah, you know, I've been watching what LIV is now doing, where they've done golf, and now there's serious talk about them wanting to have a big impact in the tennis world. Mm-hmm. And as fast as pickleball has been growing, I mean, here in the U.S., I think we've probably exceeded tennis in terms of participation at this point. It's going to be pretty logical for somebody to step into that and say, let's take this thing way beyond the North American shores and really make it go. You know, I'm going to be doing a new segment on my show, and we're going to call it Selkirk World. And it really is about exactly the things you're talking about. I was recently talking to one of our people in Belgium, and she was telling me that the English Open is already registered at over 1,300, and it may be going past 1,400 before that ever gets going. And that's getting to be a heck of a tournament. And so it'll be fun to see those things.
Absolutely.
One of the things that's kind of interesting, and you might have some opinions on this, is a lot of talk about how does pickleball ever get into the Olympics? Will it get in there? And the issue of a international organization that has to become recognized as the singular organization. Do you see anything happening that way? Or do you have any insights on what you feel might be moving that way?
I don't know a ton on kind of the organizational side of it and who's kind of leading that charge. I do know, talking to like Pran and Shashank of Global Sports and Pickleball United in India, they've kind of finally got, I think in every country, there's always people competing for that like organizing body. And right. I think they've been able to come to a place where they have a united front now. I think it's going to be important. I don't know how important pickleball is in getting to the Olympics. If it's necessary, if it's actually useful. I know talking to, you know, beach volleyball player Casey Patterson, who I used to do a podcast with, he actually thought getting into the Olympics hurt the sport on their end. So I don't have a huge opinion on the Olympic stuff, or I think the sport's definitely going to have to get more organized. Even on the betting side, right? Like you need organizing bodies, you need a doping, you know, doping procedures, you need more regulatory guidelines and more compliance stuff, because right now it's truly still a free-for-all. I know betting's been live, you know, on some sports books for the PPA, and I'm pretty sure like players are supposed to like sign off on like, yeah, we know we won't bet on this. And I don't think any of that stuff's ever been distributed. I've never seen anything. So there's just a lot of, it's still the Wild West in terms of regulation. There are none. So I think it's going to require organizing bodies to help with that. And I don't know if that's going to, like, in the terms of the U.S., I don't think that's going to be UPA. I would see that being USA Pickleball and APP as more of like compliance governance. I don't even know if UPA would even want to get into that whole realm. They feel like it feels like they're doing their thing, and they're focused on making money and getting eyeballs on the sport and growing the pro game. But yeah, I don't think that's necessarily the focus of USA Pickleball or the APP. And I think they're looking more at at it from like a grassroots growth standpoint.
Cool. Given the fact that you're really one of the few elite level players that have gone from America, from the pro game to England, and then also to India, what's the talent pool that's growing up around the world?
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of talent. I think in India, especially even the Indian Open final, like Andre and I won in three games. I wasn't moving necessarily very well, but we were able to do it. But those guys are good, man. Arman and Harsh, like they are good, talented players. And that's without even really seeing consistent high-level pickleball, which is a very big deal in terms of development and getting better at the sport and being able to compete on a consistent basis at the pro level. Like you have to see pro-level play often, and those guys
Right.
haven't. And the fact that they're already, I mean, they beat Jaden Broderick and Ryler DeHart, and that's a good team. That's a good APP team, and they handled them pretty easily, I think. So you're going to see, especially as like that contingent's coming over for the U.S. Open in Naples. And those guys are gonna, you're gonna get to see, the talent that India has. And even looking at, because I went over there also last October and taught. They brought me over for a week, and I worked with all of kind of their up and coming players, all the way down to like 10 years old. And there's this 11-year-old who I think, like skills wise, is probably the best 11-year-old in the world. Like they have incredible talent coming up, and I think the more exposure they get, it's only up from there.
How cool is that? One of the things that is just amazing to me, I've actually been in the game since about 2012. You were talking about the shortcomings of playing in gyms and things like that. Well, that was my world for 7, 8 years before we even fantasized about dedicated courts. So I'm not quite that put behind. I've actually had a couple of conversations with European developers that are beginning to think about coming in a significant way, whether it's a facility, an entertainment type of operation. I think some things may begin to happen pretty quick that really draw eyes to the sport that way. I want to just take a second. And for those of you that are watching this show, you're seeing what we're trying to do. If there are topics or there are guests that you would like to see us do on this show, please leave a note in the comments. Guys like Rob are not easy to find. Their level of knowledge and expertise. If you know somebody that really impresses you, put it in the comments. Let me know. As we begin to wrap up this interview, Rob, I want to talk about the things we've talked about, the things that you've done getting into the sport, bringing us to today. You've talked a little bit about the fact that you'd like to do things internationally and globally. What about broadcasting as a serious part of your future? Would that be of interest to you?
Yeah, I would love it. I've gotten a few tastes of it. Last year at Beer City, I was able to commentate on singles day because I don't play singles, and it was just Adam Stone and I in the booth, which obviously we have a podcast together, so that chemistry and back and forth is really good and fun. But the company and organization that's putting on the U.S. Open now, Pickle Four, they did a ballpark series this past summer, and I was fortunate enough to be able to play at Fenway Park, which how insane is that to play pickleball on the field at Fenway Park. But I was also able to do commentary with them, and it was just, yeah, I could absolutely see myself doing commentary in the future. I think it's so fun. Like I said, if I have a future where I can just talk about pickleball, like, that's a win for me. And that's, yeah, I would be stoked.
Well, let's make that happen. I don't know exactly what I
Amen.
can do to help, but we need to get you into that next level. In fantasy world, I always like to be in fantasy world talking about the future. Pickleball, what do you see 3 to 5 years from now in this game that we all enjoy?
Oh, I think we see a big, and it's been a topic of this conversation today, Paul. I think the international landscape is really matured. I think you'll see a pro tour internationally with big prize money. I think you'll see probably similar team events to MLP internationally. I think the talent on the pro side is going to be global. I don't think the concentration of top pros will be based in the US. I think it'll be heavily probably Asian based, is my prediction. And I think that it's not just even the pros in America. It'll be like an ATP tour, like where you're playing internationally more frequently. And I think that's super exciting. I don't know if the I don't I'm not predicting like tennis money by any means like that. I think the international side's really going to mature over the next few years. And I think we're talking about the sport, and this is going to take a lot of grassroots internationally, just like it took time in the US on the amateur side in terms of participation. But we've seen kind of that snowball in the US of how quickly it can go from 2 million people playing to 50 million people playing. It doesn't take much, right? And I think that's kind of the speed and acceleration that we're going to see internationally once each of these countries start seeing a little traction.
Very nice, very nice. Rob, I want to thank you for being with us. It's fun having a podcast brother from Selkirk TV on the show with me. This is very cool. For those of you that are watching, Selkirk TV makes this all happen for all of us. Take the opportunity to download the Selkirk TV app on your phone. There is more content on there and even live broadcasts very often of pro events. Get on it and go. Rob, thank you so much for joining me. I had a gas.
Oh, it was a blast. Thanks for thinking of me. And you do, just big props on hosting the show. You do an incredible job. You're a great host. You ask great questions. So, yeah, thanks for thinking of me.